Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt One Plus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt One Plus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? A Millennial's Guide to the Action TV of Yesteryear. Today we revisit the mountain climbing, cabin frying, time bomb ticking, pommy ass kicking world of MacGyver. I'm Jay McCain. With me as always is A. Ron Hubbard, plus special guest Jim Jones.
Hey everybody.
Howdy.
What an episode, guys. I think I may be a convert.
Okay.
After how down.
This is the one?
I was worried.
This wouldn't be the one.
I was worried. I was like, uh-huh. I thought this was a wild and crazy MacGyver episode. And
it
I know
it was. It's
and it's it blows
it, was.
It blows my mind that this is the best episode as voted by. I mean, I guess it's the Murdoch thing because people love Murdoch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the return of Murdoch.
I mean, how couldn't you after this? And I have questions about Murdoch overall that we'll get to. But,
I think I have answers. I went deep dive on Murdoch. I watched a couple of other episodes, at least parts of them. There might be some apocrypha somewhere in this particular episode or in Murdoch's backstory, but I'm really excited to talk about that.
Okay, well, I am too. I loved this episode, and overall, without any spoilers or anything, I think the gestalt of it to me, if I'm using that word correctly, is this was a Batman versus a Joker movie in the form of a MacGyver TV episode.
Yes. Yeah.
And I just really enjoyed it.
It felt a little bigger. Like maybe this is MacGyver's calling card because it was like filmed in Vancouver, British Columbia, when that was kind of, I still think, rare.
So the they novelty.
Had, but it did do a lot of what looks like on location, you know, up a mountain.
Yes.
Renting helicopter type shooting. Yep. And I think that was rare in the day, you know?
I definitely file this under we got a helicopter and we're going to use it television.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some sweeping shots. They're like some producer went on a vacation was like, we got to do an episode here.
They went with the team from Airwolf and said, hey, you guys got helicopters, right?
The same guys,
find
I'm
some,
sure.
We could find some synergy. Uh-huh. We could find some synergy here.
I was pleasantly surprised that this is produced by Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
Like, I love that he got up to it. Like, him and Ron Howard, like, they're like, Happy Days is just the beginning.
They're moguls, baby. yeah. I looked it up because these locations were stunning, and I was wondering, like, where they did film it. Apparently, this was all filmed in Mount Garibaldi Provincial Park in British Columbia, except for that's where all the like surrounding town stuff and like the faraway shot of the mountain. But the actual location of the Widowmaker is a part of the mountain called Stawmus Chief, from Stawmus Chief Provincial Park in Squamish, British Columbia. But they're just really? fantastic locations, man.
Squamish, BC.
Yeah, that's the name of the town. Unless I mean, maybe there's a weird Canadian pronunciation of it. You know,
I'm looking it up right now. That's
like how Indiana, like... there's a town Versailles, but it's pronounced Versailles. Like it could be something like that, but it's Squamish, BC.
The closest Indian community to where I live is called the Squamish. So.
Oh, I'm sure it's got to be related, right? You guys are like stone's throw away.
Well, British Columbia is a large province.
Nah, I'm
pretty
sure.
I'm wondering if it's on Vancouver Island. Anyway, now I'm like, yeah, it's one of those small provinces.
Anyway, I'm curious to hear is like, why are you a convert to MacGyver after this episode? Because this thing is like so many levels up MacGyver's ass in terms of like the backstory and the background and the back characters. Uh-huh. And it's a weird kind of rhyming episode. There's like a first half and then a second half and they're all bridged uh-huh. together. And it's but, you know, like what is it to sing to you about this episode?
Well, there's some legitimately good creative writing going on here. Like you said, how it kind of like it sets it up and then it revisits the setup at the end. And I thought that was like actually good writing. And they just pulled out all the stops. They pulled out all sorts of fireworks and explosions and they destroyed some cars. And
they did.
One thing that I've discovered from doing this podcast is I really don't like media that wastes my time, and I kind of already knew that. Like George R. R. Martin, I'm looking at you. What if this was like action packed and like they didn't, I don't know, like I felt like I pretty much got the whole backstory of Muldoon, that's his name, not Muldoon.
Murdoch.
Whatever. Like, what's in a name? Exactly. It's like, okay, there's something happened where he got his face burned off and MacGyver was involved in that, so.
And Murdoch's just a great name for a villain.
Murdoch.
It's a strong, it's a powerful name. I like it.
It is. It's funny because like you mentioned that like apparently there's this backstory we got burnt up because we actually meet Murdoch the first time we meet him. That's his backstory, is him and MacGyver crossed swords long ago and MacGyver got the better of him and he's sworn revenge. It's like, it's this weird, like you got the same experience we did on the first time around because he doesn't have an origin episode. It's origin predates the series.
Nice, dude.
Which
how
is pretty
is
cool.
They rebooted this show, right?
Mm-hmm. They did reboot this show. And they do have a rebooted Murdoch, and he's the creepy guy. Do you remember the guy that the Joker, the Heath Ledger Joker, recruits to like give him his cop uniform? And he's like the giggly guy that Batman's interrogating up in the apartment. He plays Murdoch in the reboot.
Got you. So yet another Batman and Joker.
True.
Connection.
True.
I just think this was the Dark Knight of MacGyver, and I will die on that very, very tall mountain.
I think you're onto something.
It is definitely like a more brooding MacGyver. It's weirdly not representative of most of MacGyver. This is a very strange MacGyver episode, which is why it was like weird to hear you say, "Oh, this is the one that did it."
Right.
You might not like the rest of MacGyver.
I only like moody MacGyver.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's even contained in the episode because everyone, all of Mac's old friends, is like, "Oh, we're worried about Mac. The light's gone out of him. He's got no smile. He's just this Stringfellow Hawkian type figure." Suddenly.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Airwolf joke. I know why this guy didn't get it. I was hoping that she would spark a memory cell.
That his name is so bizarre.
Stringfellow Hawk. Yep.
Stringfellow.
Yes. Stringfellow.
Wow. Wow.
That's a name.
I thought Murdoch was
baby.
Good.
That's the hero. Wait till you hear what the villains are called in Airwolf.
Damn. Airwolf. But yeah, I enjoyed it. What can I say? It was action-packed. The villain is a lot of fun. The stakes are pretty high. I would say, like, they didn't pull their punches. I did not think some of the things, again, I'm trying to tiptoe around any sort of like spoiler stuff at this moment, but I was surprised with some of the plot advancement that happened very early on in the episode.
So
I'm
glad you liked
intrusive,
it.
The intrusive thoughts meme. That's what's going on in my head the entire time in this episode. I'm like, oh, maybe this will happen. And then I'm like, sure. Well, that's crazy. That'll never happen. And then it immediately happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy to see it.
I'm glad you liked it, Jay. I got to say that I felt like this is a weirdly non-representative MacGyver episode. And I was really disappointed in the improvised equipment I thought that the enterprise equipment, like, like I was thinking for the number, and I can see why this is the number one, because Murdoch is a fan favorite. He is his big nemesis. It's the second time he returned. It's also like got the death of a fairly major character. She'd been in a couple episodes, you know, one half of, or I guess one third of the trio of her and Jack, what's his face? Jack Dalton, who, by the way, is he the direct inspiration for Baloo the bear in Tailspin? Because I did a ton of research and reading, and like I started making connections in my kid, like my kid and adult brain. And Jack Dalton is this like fly by night unlicensed pilot that flies this cargo plane, like twin tailed cargo plane, and his standard outfit looks exactly like Baloo from Tailspin. He's got the like World War II bomber jacket with the fucking hat and the cat. I mean, it's like how I wish I could go back and be a writer for kid shows in the 80s.
Yeah, for real.
Because all I have to do is take whatever is on the drama, file the sex off, dumb down the violence, and I'm just done. I'm just done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Making a talking bear.
But yeah, like I guess the gadget of the series dies in this episode. You know, if I'm going from Tailspin to Rescue Rangers, I guess, in my, cause I, was there a lady? Was there a lady in Tailspin? It was just always Baloo fucking with Shere Khan and,
yeah, boy, I can't remember.
How did they make a multi-episode season, multi-season thing out of Baloo the bear doing illicit cargo runs for Shere Khan the tiger? What?
Did he ever, like, was he ever in a competition against Launchpad?
No, I don't think there was any Launchpad.
No crossover?
I mean, Disney Afternoons got up to wild shit, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
so Tailspin is set in the Jungle Book universe.
It's the Jungle Book universe where Baloo everyone wears human clothes and pilots human technology and has human business concerns. Like Shere Khan is Lex Luthor. He runs a multinational business that needs some illegal stuff done, and that's where he turns the. And he's like the job of the. I don't. Yeah, I mean, like, I cannot remember a single episode of that show. Oh, the monkey, the orangutan's a big.
Yeah.
Big part of it. But I can't remember a single plot, but like I remember all the characters and their shtick. I just can't remember like why they did anything that they did. Rescue Rangers, that makes sense. They're rescuing people, you know?
Right.
They're an outfit. They're like a team, you know?
Tailspin was a little bit more like Firefly. Like I feel like there's a lot of illegal cargo.
It's true. You can't take the sky from Baloo for sure. He's always flashing back to the Battle of Mowgli. but anyway, MacGyver, we're going off on tangents. We're going off on a whole bunch of 80s tangents here. Should we start with the episode, or is there any more
Let's get into it.
Do you want me to take it, or you?
I did laugh at the fact that it kind of starts with him climbing a mountain, because that came up in I want to call it Feeny. That's not what the show's called. Knight Rider. There's a whole episode where he goes and has some R&R where he's going to mountain climb.
Well, not only that, but the pilot episode of MacGyver begins with him free climbing a sheer cliff in Central Asia. No mention
Hang
of
on,
fear of
wait
heights.
Wait a minute. You're right.
No fear of heights. This is what I'm talking about with the Apocrypha, man. They're retconning this fear of heights. I don't get it.
Maybe there's an episode where he develops a fear of heights in like season two.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. I was actually wondering if sometime between the pilot and this episode, they just worked that in as like, you know what, MacGyver, he's too much of a Gary Stu. We got to give him a weakness, and it's like heights.
Yeah,
because again, he's free climbing a way gnarlier thing, solo, no backup, looking like Papa fucking Smurf. In the pilot episode, so
maybe his other best friend fell off a mountain.
That's it.
That gave him a real
his
complex.
His male best friend from college, Michelle, died, and this is his female best friend from college, Mike.
But yeah, it's like, did they invent mountain climbing in the 80s or something? Because it's like this, there's cliffhanger, there was definitely a crate.
I kind of think that they did invent like mass market, like rugged outdoor North Face type shit, like Gore-Tex.
Yeah, was
it, and that like, that opened it up, because before you had to have these elaborate systems of furs and undergarments and pitons and all this shit, and right. Now you just went to REI and you bought a bunch of plastic shit and it lasted forever.
Gore-Tex,
and kept
baby.
You warm and yeah.
This is why there's a lot of brightly colored corpses on Mount Everest right now.
Yes, they died wearing this shit. That's exactly where Blue Boots came from.
Yeah,
he's looking like Papa Smurf, and that, and his ass has been on the Himalayas for 40 years.
Yeah. If it's all right with you, I'll put the recap crown upon your head.
So, like, as we mentioned, it opens like the pilot did, with him scaling a sheer cliff, and he's talking about how much he hates notes, and they exposit that he is with a previously established character. This is, again, one of his best friends from college, Mike.
Right.
And she's coaching him through his fear of heights on a very difficult free climb.
Right. It seems like maybe an advanced climb for where he's at.
But he is like a super agent, kind of like, you know, he climbed the whole ass mountain in Central Asia. I want to tell you something that's going to break your heart, Jay. So Mike is a recurring character, but she's recast in this episode. Do you know who originally played Mike?
This couldn't possibly be like Bonnie.
Patricia McPherson, better known as Bonnie.
No
we
way.
Got fucking robbed of Bonnie.
No.
Probably because of fucking Knight Rider,
Yeah. They recast her for one episode and then, well,
and
you'll
killed
see.
I wonder if that's why, because they knew they're going to have it.
Oh,
and
my
like, well,
God.
Yeah, we'll just recast her and kill her in 30 seconds.
This makes it a lot less fun.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm watching this again, the intrusive thoughts thing. I'm like, okay, this is a named character. They have a banter, and then, you know, they're climbing up the rock face, and she is expressing her love. Like, she wants to take their relationship to the next level, and I'm like, there's no way. Like, the plot armor is too thick on this character. Now, if I had known she had been recast for one episode, maybe I wouldn't have felt that way.
She's like, I want you to love me, MacGyver. He's like, are you familiar with the death zone? The part high enough on that mountain where nothing can grow and nothing can live? Well, you're in the friend zone. And this place in my heart, nothing can grow. And then she angrily and sadly and resignedly climbs away, leaving him in the dust so she can kind of weep up the mountain. And suddenly the shoe is on the other foot. She's the one falling. She's the one having to be talked through a tough situation, except for her equipment fails and she
her
falls.
Crappy equipment from REI. Like,
yeah,
this is why I buy my harness.
It's a classic cliffhanger situation.
I buy my harness from at least the $2 store. She got hers from the 99-cent store. I feel like if that equipment was designed properly at all, she should have been fine. She falls, she's dangling, she hits her head.
See, I place a premium on myself and my life, so I only buy my climbing equipment from Five Below. I mean, this dollar store stuff is just sketchy. You got to at least be paying a five spot, you know?
Yeah, totally. So this is like, I'm watching this and I'm just shocked. I'm like, there's no fucking way they just did this. I'm like, she's going to be fine somehow.
Well, are you thinking this as you see her body falling thousands of feet?
Yes, I was.
Wow. Okay.
It was, you know, it's obviously a dummy, but this is kind of a horrifying shot to see in mid 80s television. And I think like whatever shock you felt times that by a million, because in 1980s television, no one fucking died. No named character that's having like an emotional arc. And the fact that like there's a hell of a lot more continuity in MacGyver than I was giving a credit. I was like you, I was fascinated. I started reading the wiki there's a whole arc where the government institution that he works for has gone rogue, and him and Pete have to shut it down, and it gets transformed into the Fiend. Like, there's multiple season long arcs of like this cloak and dagger shit. People must have really ate this stuff up. It was kind of fresh.
Yes. Fresh to death, as the kids say.
And again, I got my notes, this helicopter shot. It is like a lot of things at work is because the heights that they're filming from are terrifying. And like, I'm kind of I got pretty mild fear of heights, or I guess pretty severe fear of heights. And this shit gave me like vertigo. Some of the camera angles they were pushing.
I have a healthy respect for heights.
Some
would call fear, but I think it's a very logical. I do want to say this is a quick tangent, but when you and I were in the Red River Gorge, there's at the end of our hike, we're both sitting at the edge of this bluff. I think it was me. I throw like a stick off the edge, and there's just like a 10 second hang time, and we hear it hit way below, and we both just scoot back like 10 feet.
Yeah. Let's get a body length away from this ledge, shall we? Yeah.
But yes, I was quite shocked at the death. And here's the thing, too. Like, she falls. It happens fast. She hits her head. Her harness breaks. She falls. I'm still, like, thinking, you know, next scene is going to be her at the hospital in a full body cast or something.
Oh, man, yeah.
No, it's immediate. They're talking about the funeral. Like, they got...
No, she's dead.
They fringed her pretty quickly.
They did. And I guess that's one criticism you can level at it, is they killed a whole ass woman just to give Mac a 40-minute arc in his character. But,
about,
you know,
getting over his fear of heights.
Just to get over his fear. Our hero, this crippling fear of heights, we've wrote ourselves into a corner, because it turns out a man of action has to get up high a lot. So, like, what do we got, boys? College girlfriend. Let's kill her on a mountain and have him save another girl in the exact same situation. Totally curious heights. I like it. Let's go with just that.
Can we make sure there's another love interest by the end of the episode? Of course.
Right. And maybe hotter, because, you know, we have a downgrade here from Bonnie to this. We need to punch it up a bit, you know. Richard Dean.
Is it just me, or did
Anderson?
They look almost identical?
They did, yes.
Like, I was like, wait, she's back? She's working at the Institute? I thought she died.
Flashback, yeah. No, it's emergency backup, Mike.
Yeah.
Especially, it seems like all of the women that we've seen in MacGyver so far are kind of cast from the same mold in terms of,
yes,
like, they're plucky,
sure,
and they're brash, and they're, you know, not afraid to mix it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have to be interesting to MacGyver, right?
That's true.
He's that kind of guy. So
that is true.
He couldn't have a platonic work relationship. Although,
no,
I guess he did have one, and she died.
He did. And I guess this also...
So never
this,
again.
This Nikki we're about to meet is a recurring character as well. So anyway, we go to the Foundation, and Pete Thornton, which I don't know that you've met before, but he is MacGyver's kind of handler. He's the guy who signs his cases. And
he's kind of the older guy.
Yeah.
That's the Pete you're talking about, that's that Blue is cloned from?
No.
No, this is this guy. We didn't actually see him. We just heard him on the phone.
All right.
Here's the thing with Pete. You have seen him before. He's in the pilot.
He is?
He meets MacGyver for apparently the first time in the pilot episode. And I went deep diving
right
on this, and this is the Apocrypha, another piece of Apocrypha. I was like, okay, when did Murdoch first, you know, come in contact with MacGyver? What's the backstory? I was digging around in that, and I found out that in episode like 13 or something, I don't remember which
I think
one, 18.
It's 18, season 2, episode 18.
Season 2, yeah. They tell the story of the first time that Pete and Mac met, because Mac accidentally saves Murdoch from Pete. He's been like chasing him.
Mm-hmm.
And they meet for the first time there, but they also met for the first time in the pilot. So
right.
I don't understand what's happening.
Pilots,
you know,
aren't real canon.
Right.
Yeah. That's the real answer, is they didn't think of any of this shit. Yeah.
Exactly. As they got better, like, ooh,
we'll
like that better.
About,
you know what? That's the
Mr.
new. He's
Feeny
a secret agent, right? His backstory's kind
of
sketchy. We'll just go with, let's
and
go
now
with
we're
that.
Back with
deep
more.
Cover.
Why is
they
Mr.
don't
Feeny
know
a car?
Hey, he has fear of heights. Hey, climb the mountain. Forget about it. That was a pilot. Nobody remembers.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All in one interchangeable battery. Get cordless, gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
MacGyver's case manager is at the office and he's fretting. He's like, you know, I can't find Mac. He's not at his houseboat. He's not answering the phone at my cabin.
Which that was also a fun bit of lore, the houseboat thing. I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't he own a houseboat?
Oh, and I want to talk about the houseboat here in a minute. And he's running. He's trying to run away from the situation. And they both, this woman, Nikki, who is another long-running character in the series, muse about how it happened, and they're like, Mike is an expert, how could she make a mistake? And at this point I was thinking, do people medium suspect that MacGyver murdered her? Like, is that where they're going with this thing? That, like, because I knew that this is a Murdoch episode, and I thought that, like, maybe Murdoch, there's gonna be a flashback where he's loosened her belt or whatever, because, like, everyone's like, how in the hell could this expert? And I'm like, is he trying to frame MacGyver for the murder of his ex, you know, college
I don't think Murdoch's
friend?
That subtle.
No.
It doesn't appear to be.
But I was like, where is this fucking going? Why? Because, like, I do think they medium suspect him. I do.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Well, they might have been like, you know, everyone knew she had feelings for him, and it would be just one push, and suddenly, problem solved. Also, he got that $250,000 life insurance policy on her 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. This
Which is just smart if you're going mountain climbing. I mean,
that's true, actually.
Come on.
Yeah. If someone's like, yeah, don't worry, well, I'll get you over your fear of heights, we'll do the Widowmaker. All right, I'm taking a life insurance policy out on you.
So Pete eventually tracks him down at his cabin. I think this is supposed to be Pete's cabin, and tries to lure him back to life, because it's been weeks since anyone's seen MacGyver.
I think it's been a week.
Has it been a week? I thought it was two, but it, you know, it's been long enough that his friends are worried about him.
He also manages to grow no facial hair during this time, so either he's shaving or he just cannot grow a beard.
MacGyver might grieve, but he's going to grieve clean shaven, man. It's like the whole effect of the mullet is lost with facial hair.
He saves all of his, hair for the back of his neck.
That's right. You gotta let that pop. You gotta let that
pop. Actually,
you can't get that lost in. Yeah, you can't get that lost in your beard. You gotta have that thing flapping free.
That's true. Otherwise, you look like Billy Mitchell.
Like an Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Ooh,
if you're
Obi-Wan,
mullet plus beard, you're looking Ewan McGregor,
true.
Episode 2, Attack of the Clones era Kenobi.
That was a good look.
So we find in a scene that Mac is punishing himself. He thinks that he's somehow responsible for Mike's death, and Pete reasons with him that punishing yourself won't bring Mike back, and MacGyver angrily rejoins, neither will work it for you, Dad! And I kind of thought that Richard Dean Anderson was a good actor, but this episode has me rethinking it. I think he's not very good at anything except for smug self-assuredness.
He's a good face actor. When he does a lot of, like, work with his face. Like, when he's looking at the Polaroids that come up later with his furrowed brow. You know. Maybe not as
good. I mean, some actors are just like that, right? They've got that one gear. They're very charming,
like,
or
Richard.
Something when they're smiling. Like Richard, yeah. But I noticed that with Julian Bashir. I'm doing a Deep Space Nine rewatch. I don't think the guy, Alexander Siddig, who plays him, can do much but be like kind of a fuckboy.
Is that just at this stage? Because I feel like I've seen Alexander Siddig in things that he has been good at. Because I thought he was really good at in Syriana.
Yeah.
And he was pretty good as Prince Doran. Like, I think he was criminally underused as Prince Doran in Game of Thrones. But, like, I liked where they were going. And, my God, there was really good book material for him. And they just, you know, they Murdoch'd him.
Are there any SG-1 fans here? Stargate SG-1 fans?
Not me. I'm SGOG, but not SG-1.
Yeah, not me either. I was just wondering if big old Dick Dean did anything good there. But I don't know. I've not seen it.
I mean, he's got his fans for sure.
The only reference that you guys have made in the last like 60 seconds that I have seen is Syriana.
Nice.
Oh, cool. Meanwhile, someone's breaking into MacGyver's houseboat. Speaking of his houseboat, I gotta say, it wasn't until my second watch through when I was taking my notes that I realized this was an actual boat that was a house, because this thing is heavy on house, light on boat.
Is this like those casinos that are technically riverboat casinos, yeah, but are like structurally connected to land?
It just looks like a flat, man. Like,
that's
it's
what
like,
houseboats look like, though. Like, there's a big
houseboat I've ever seen doesn't have like wooden carved side, you know, like Lloyd Wright, Frank Lloyd Wright style architecture. It's a weird houseboat, man. Why are you trying to die on this hill? This is a normal houseboat.
So there's a houseboat community in Seattle, and this is exactly what they all look like.
For real.
Yeah, they just look like normal houses that are boats.
Maybe I am more familiar with like vacation style, Lake Cumberland type houseboats, but they've always looked like the shit from Cape Fear, not like this full on house. I want you guys to Google right now MacGyver's houseboat. And it's the first result. It's actually a famous houseboat called Land's End that they rented out for this location. You tell me, does that look like a fucking houseboat to you? Because it looked like someone took a rustic cabin, scooped it out of there, Dell's Hollow, and plopped it on a pier. Except for you can't tell the pier.
It's got a chimney.
This one is particularly housey. That's for sure.
That's all I said.
I'm going to Google Lake Union houseboats, because there's some similar, I would say. Oh, shit, I'm not going to find what I need. Whatever.
What do you do with the indoor plumbing in a houseboat?
You just pipe it right to the bay. Just shit it out.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
You get the water, too.
If you want to be environmentally conscious, you install a garbage disposer in line so it macerates the waste before it goes into... Uh-huh. But yeah, you just dump it out there, yeah.
And then sprays it.
Yeah, you spray it. So this guy's breaking into MacGyver's houseboat. And he plays a... kids, strap in. We used to have voicemail machines that were like attached to your house.
Oh yeah, this is funny. Never again would this.
And if anyone comes into your house and wants to hear your shit, they just went up there and hit a button and they played. It was such a the Hollywood writers must have just had it so fucking easy for the one decade that this was a common technology, because it was such a great way to figure out what the fuck is going on and to connect a thread.
Technically, it was peer-to-peer encrypted. If he was also called from another houseboat.
Jesus.
So, this is true. And he hears a bunch of messages from all of Mac's friends, including Nikki. So Nikki, her backstory is she was an investigator with police training who met MacGyver in an earlier season when she's investigating her brother Danny's mysterious murder. She's got a tragic backstory. Her husband, who I think was an FBI agent, got killed in a mafia car bombing. That was meant for her, because she was the one leading the investigation. And as a result, she's kind of like the female MacGyver, and that she's afraid to become involved with anyone because she thinks it'll jinx them, like she jinxed her husband. So they're going to go through a whole fucking arc in this series. And I think this is before I understand that there's, is, she was in yeah. three or four episodes and they were like, they butted heads. They were always,
right.
she was always busting his balls and saying that he's reckless and didn't know what he's talking about. And this is the episode where they start to cross over into friends.
Or more maybe, than maybe friends. Maybe more. Yeah.
I don't know.
I am curious because they were kind of setting that up, I would say.
So it's funny because the Pete calls and says he's worried about him. Our friend Jack Dalton, Blue the Bear, calls, says he's worried about him. Nikki calls, says he's worried about him. And from all the stuff that they're saying, this guy Pete puts together the context where MacGyver is with some brochures that he left on the table and figures right. out that he's camping at the Widowmaker.
Well, yeah. Well, one of the things that he found was like, a beginner's guide to hiking, climbing the Widowmaker.
Right, right.
Great cabins your friend owns at Widowmaker monthly.
Uh-huh. And it's all stamped with his friend Ellard's address, so you don't know right where to go.
Yeah, yeah. And he has a fun little plan to, like, really confirm where MacGyver is.
Yeah, did you... What did you think about the blowtorch work here?
Oh, I thought he was going to burn down the houseboat.
I did too. They made such a meal out of this scene of him carving, and yeah. I'm like, this is going to be something fucked up. It's going to be some kind of weird devil mural or a cult thing or something. And it's just the shittiest burnt looking tombstone that looks more like a loaf of bread, and it says R.I.P. MacGyver.
It's like a seventh grader smoking pot in the, In the parking lot level of graffiti. But I like this guy. He's taking pictures. That's apparently one of his themes. Is like calling he likes cards. To photograph his crimes. And he has a calling card.
He leaves
card.
A photo at the scene. So you can look up at the R.I.P. MacGyver that he's written on the wall and then look down at the photo he took of it.
Yeah. Why did they do that? Why did he do that? Is that because like...
So this is a trait of his. Actually, Jay, you're right. This is kind of his calling card. He likes to take photos of the people that he kills for, like, keepsakes. So I guess, like, the photo... Because later on, Pete is going to, like, pick up this photo and just insta-figure out what's happening here. And I think it's because of the photo. Like where the R.I.P. MacGyver could really be anybody.
Yeah. I could be the neighbor.
Right. Well, I think they're taking
those
liberties
communities
too,
are...
because supposedly his thing was he was always trying to rig the a picture to take at the moment of his victim's death to keep as a keepsake.
Yes,
but right. Like, one of these flashbacks is buck wild. He's like in a van and he's dressed as a woman, and then like
we'll get there. We'll get there.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I jumped ahead here.
Yeah, you're gonna be in for a ride, audience. Strap in. So Pete is shook by MacGyver with no smile, no light behind his eyes. Nikki at the foundation says, "You know what, Pete? You're just too close. You don't have what it takes to connect and relate. You gotta be more of a stranger." And he's like, "That doesn't make any fucking sense, but you're welcome to try."
Right.
So she does. She goes by and stops at Ellard's, which is the local, I guess, the last general store before you get to the mountains, and stocks up. Where she's met by a shadowy man who helps her with some car trouble.
Right.
Did he sell them the shoddy climbing equipment?
Ellard.
I don't think so. No way.
Yeah. If you're buying climbing equipment at a fucking general store, like that's a notch below the Dollar General. Come on.
Yeah. There. If you're going on a mountain climbing expedition and you're like, we'll buy equipment on the way.
Yeah, you might as well just no questions asked, order from Alibaba Express or something. It's just not
like
good.
I stopped for beef jerky on a road trip. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and also a harness.
So there's a lot to talk about. I want to talk about one thing. How TV people think grocery bags work.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, seriously.
The way this woman manhandles these bags of groceries and, like, what? No hand opens doors and kicks doors open and shut. Like, it must have been a joke between her and the director where he's just like, struggle more, kick it, kick it harder. Like, because it's like, it's... And it's the way... So Ellard is this kindly old man who apparently is a World War II vet. And he goes to help her with her groceries out to her car,
But before he gets to the really useful part, he is so bored her with his tales of his buddies dying in Midway that she, well, anyway, I gotta be goings him, and then has to struggle with his groceries in the truck. It's the funniest fucking sequence I've ever seen.
He was nice. He was trying to get her off the bore her
imagine,
away.
Imagine if in the middle of Quint's story in Jaws, he's like, I had eyes like a doll's eyes, and when they roll back in, he's like, well, anyway, I'm sure you're busy, Quint, I gotta be going. That's what she did to this dude! Yeah. It's so funny!
It's a different generation. Every old person had some sort of WWII story, you know?
Yeah. And he's
reinforcing the theme. He's stuck because he lost a lot of buddies at the battle. Also, this established he's a Navy man, which will come in later. Mm-hmm. But he said it established the theme of you could put your buddies to bed, but you never forget them. It always is kind of something that haunts you, just like it's eating and haunting at MacGyver.
Right.
So
anyway, there's a party line I gotta call. I'm gonna be on the phone for a while.
I want to ask you. What is Murdoch's deal here? He's just hanging out at the store waiting for does he plant dynamite on everyone's car that's going up the mountain?
That's a really good question.
Because I know he heard her voice. Maybe he's that good of an international assassin. He just has pitch perfect ear and he recognized her voice from the voice recorder.
Sure. But like,
because
he's
just
talking about MacGyver in this conversation though. Is it like kind of obvious?
I didn't think he was sitting
in the truck close enough to hear.
I don't think so.
Maybe not.
Because
they definitely are. Because that's why he's making the analogy to losing his buddies in war. That he knows how he feels. Yeah. So he might have a hunch,
and then he goes over there.
He got lucky. He got pretty lucky. So.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But it is, it's a kind of, because I was still guessing. I was like, what is he, did he just cut her brake cables? Or like, what is he doing? No, he just,
right.
So
the old spark plug. But then he verifies when he's like, nah, the friend that you're going to visit is he. Oh, he actually, he doesn't, I don't know why I give him a prospector voice. He's like, howdy, ma'am. And it's like, now this friend you're going to see, is he mechanically inclined?
You should see what he can do with a paperclip.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're in good hands. Yeah.
The original title of MacGyver was Mechanically Inclined. I got two groaners out of Jim so far.
If you wanted to come back in season three, you got to stop all this shit, Jay.
Impossible for me to stop.
Love it.
So she makes her way to Widow's Peak or wherever the fuck she's going, and she awkwardly gets out of the truck with both of these grocery bags in hand. She awkwardly waddles around the door and awkwardly kicks it, like, yeah, high kicks it, which she's going to use that identical move on Murdoch in about 30 minutes.
That's true. Foreshadowing.
She carries the
grocery. She's never opened a door with her hands in her life, and it trained her.
And she's like, look at her kicking the door shut. She just like, she just expertly uses her feet to open and close doors. She sets her bags down and finds out Mac out back where he's still in full Phantom of the Opera mode. And
he is still refusing
to talk.
Bad.
Well, I mean, he's real. Okay. He's reclining on a fucking wooden crate that's cocked at a 45 degree angle, staring up at the sky. This is not relaxing. This is brooding.
He wants somebody to see him. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
He's hoping the whole time, I hope Pete shows up and finds me like this.
Yeah,
he does get
a pretty spry from this position. Like,
what's funny is in MacGyver's mind, if Pete asked him one more time to come back to work, he was going to do it. And Pete just gave, and he's like this whole time been thinking, God, I just, that was a stupid thing. I set this mental thing where it's like, he's got to ask me three times and he didn't do it. And I'm too stubborn to call. And
indeed. So, it's a beautiful lake.
He's no more receptive to her than he was to Pete. Surprise, surprise. But she goes aggressively for the, did she murder her angle? Like, mm-hmm. She just out
and
says,
her, did you?
Yeah. The way you talked about her, it sounds like you pushed her. And MacGyver, this is before she goes, the way you talk about it, it's like you pushed her himself. And he comes up, he's like, hey, you don't know that. You can't prove that. Not in any kind of legally binding sense. And I'm like, what? What are they doing with this?
There's not a court in the land that will convict me.
That's right. There's no witnesses.
I don't know that I like this version of MacGyver. I like the MacGyver who's got some spunk, got always positive, right? Can get out of any scrap. This time he's down, and I don't like it, man.
Wow. Yeah, this is so funny. The tables have turned in the opinions of MacGyver.
We like the big dick Dean Anderson. We don't like the shrinky Dean. You know?
Wow.
Definitely.
So she
too
says,
much time in that cold lake.
So they get in a fight. She's like, look, Mike's the expert, not you. She's the one responsible for it. And he's like, you understand. I did push her. Okay, I did. And she's like, he's like, I pushed her away emotionally when she needed me the most. And she fell. So you see.
I do feel like in mountaineering club or school or wherever you learn to do this, it should be like, all right, day one, folks. This is called a crampon. This is your pick. No talking about like relationship drama on the mountain. that can wait till the car ride home. You wouldn't believe how many falls we have because of this.
Yeah, come climb a mountain with me. We got some shit to settle.
Yeah.
Right.
That's not a good philosophy.
I know the perfect place to have this conversation. It's called Widowmaker Peak.
So in the middle of the argument, Mac notices something, and he sees in his cabin that someone's hung up a bunch of creepy pictures of a burning wreckage of a vehicle, and this causes him to flash back to season 2, episode 18, Partners, where Murdoch tries to kill him for revenge the first time. And
so
just
puzzling,
as,
I bet.
And he's like, but this impossible because Murdoch is dead. And just then Murdoch pops up at the window and says, not quite MacGyver. And he opens up with the flamethrower.
It's your turn to burn.
It's amazing.
And in one of those badass sequences, he burns through a glass.
Through
I think it's real in real time with this flamethrower. It's badass.
It is pretty good. Yeah, it looks good. This is only the second encounter in the show between these guys.
Yeah,
technically the third.
Canonically, second that we actually see in the show.
Right. I thought this would be like 4 or 5 Murdoch episodes deep at least.
He's very like season 7 Crickety Ricket already with the facial scarring and the hair. Because in his first appearance, I looked him up. He's kind of a pretty boy. He's got smooth, slick back kind of
like
Jeremy Irons hair. Yeah.
He kind of talks like Sting, too.
And he's pretending to be a woman in that first encounter,
right.
which is, so you need him to look nice and pristine, right?
Right.
And have
right.
women pristine, being all pristine. Scarred up.
Ah, that explains it. This is also kind of a wussy flamethrower. It goes about 8 feet.
This is one of them propane flamethrowers.
Yeah,
it's not slinging
napalm
at all.
Yeah. I feel like it'll do the job, though. Like, that mattress goes up, man.
For this kind of short range.
Yeah.
Back then, that mattress was 90% asbestos too. So it was really burning up.
Catching that thing on fire is no joke. And this is one of the lamer Mac improvisations. He just grabs a mattress, uses as a makeshift shield to back himself out the door, and kind of traps Murdoch in the building with it. I guess.
Yeah, he kind of paints himself into a quarter with a flamethrower.
He sure does. And like, it buys him a minute or two, right? So
right, yeah. Murdoch takes his time. Like, he's having fun with it. Again,
he's
the Joker. This isn't about just killing.
Right. He's in control. He wants to snap a few photos, have a few laughs. He knows he's got this car booby trapped, and that's what they do. They run down the path to get to their cars. Mac's Jeep's been sabotaged, but Nikki's truck's still going. He starts it up, but unbeknownst to him, it starts a countdown to a stick of dynamite, old school, like Dick Dastardly style bomb that's put to the bottom of her Jeep.
So this is a callback to the previous encounter with MacGyver, because the time I think the time that I remember Murdoch blowing up is this episode in season 2. where he's got Pete and MacGyver trapped in the back of a truck.
Yeah.
He's going to blow them up with dynamite, but they get out. His go-to move is dynamite, apparently. And so he like rushes them in a truck with a stick of dynamite that he's lit. He's holding it and driving at them.
Oh my God.
And MacGyver throws a rock at the window and the window breaks and it startles Murdoch. He drops it in his own truck, dynamite, and then he blows up. So I think the dynamite is actually like a callback to the last encounter with MacGyver.
Maybe the lesson learned should be let's not do dynamite next time.
Yeah. Probably.
And this is all rigged up nice. As soon as MacGyver hits the car auto locks. The windshield wiper deploys a message that I guess Murdoch has written on an old pair of underwear in shoe polish that says, bye bye, time to fry. And it's great. It's pretty great.
Uh-huh. It's very Wile E. Coyote, actually. It's extremely Wile E. Coyote.
I was really hoping for like a complicated MacGyver escape from this car, not just kicking out the window. I was hoping he'd like tear a panel off a door and like rework the innards to get out of the car, but he doesn't do any of that. He just kicks a window out.
He hears the bomb ticking, intuits that they have a very short amount of time. So he just gets in the back seat, kicks out a window of the truck, and scrampers through it. Now, she hits the ground wanting to run. He grabs her ankle and takes her down, like Mortal Kombat style. And she's like, what the fuck? And he's like, look. And they look at the trail. It's all been wired with mines.
Oh, right. With mines.
Yeah. Yeah, all these tripwire mines. He's like, there's only one way to go, and it's up.
I have a question about that later. One of the unresolved plot points... the mines, and also
when the insurance adjusters the claims adjusters show up for Pete's houseboat, it's gonna be a bad scene.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking that like when Pete and Jack finally get there, they're like running up the trail. Mac, we're coming. They both we're gonna open up the next episode of Two More Funerals. They're going into season four, and they knew they're gonna have to open up the wallet for Richard Dean Anderson, and they're just clearing house. All the old characters gotta go. All the old contracts gotta be cleared. So
we get some MacGyvering here.
Well, I also want to say that like this is a legitimately cool stunt when he's running away from the car and it's in slow motion, and I think this is Richard Dean Anderson. They do this explosion and he knocks her to the ground just as it gets to him. And it's super fucking cool. I thought it was pretty impressive. Meanwhile, Murdoch is at the cabin snapping pictures and he grins maniacally when he hears the bomb going off. So MacGyver realizes they have to escape up the mountain, but they can't have a flamethrower guy chasing him. And he decides he's going to MacGyver together a improvised arc welder that looks like an Apollo moon landing era weenie roaster. It's made out of like a car antenna and a jumper cable and a heavy duty battery. And when Murdoch comes up the path, he jabs it into his tank, causing it to explode. And Murdoch is knocked to the ground and incapacitated briefly.
They probably could have ended this with if they had gone for like sharp stick at this point, because they got a perfect ambush on him. They're able to put the arc welder on the flamethrower backpack.
That'd been the funny thing if she's like, strip me some wire there, Nikki. Are you building an improvised arc welder? Nah, it's just a fucking spear. Give me that jagged hunk of metal from the truck. Right. And he just shoves about 12 inches of jagged metal in the Murdoch's gut.
But MacGyver, and again, this is why it's Batman and Robin, because they actually kind of need each other. Because
that's true.
Murdoch is helping him through his trauma right now.
That's true. He's like, this is like therapy.
Yeah. Murdoch's having fun, and yes, and you're right. This is exactly like therapy.
I will say that Murdoch really sets a good example for the kids. He does a textbook stop, drop, and roll when he's on fire here. Mm-hmm. And then
he's familiar with fire.
I've learned from last time. Stop,
you
drop,
adopted
and roll,
the
Batman.
Flame. You adopted the flame. I was burnt by it.
You taught me that one.
I was born to it. I was burnt by it, melted by it. He then dances his way through this minefield in hot pursuit. He runs it like an NFL combine. It's pretty funny. So here's the third Mac improvisation. Mm-hmm. He borrows her belt, a piece of rope from a fallen tree, and a bracelet, and he uses this as a makeshift climbing apparatus to climb a utility pole, uses his trusty Swiss Army knife to shave away some insulation, and taps out a Morse code message, knowing that Ellard, the old Navy man, might be listening or talking to somebody and we'll hear it. It's a pretty desperate gambit, but you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
If he's on the phone, he hopefully will recognize this and come rescue me. Now, this SOS plot, it works, but it doesn't really go anywhere. And this is more what I was thinking about with the plot thread and the mines on the road. And I think this might have been the end of old Ellard when he came up to rescue him from the cabin.
Oh, shit.
Yikes. I didn't think of that.
My friend Mac needs me. It's an SOS. I got to run up there.
Yeah. And of course, it's like, not only was I in the Navy, I was a signalman.
Right.
He's also an expert.
And now we're back. He probably wouldn't have made it very far with all that dynamite on his car anyway. So
true. True.
This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, any place, make snack time playtime with Funnables fruit snacks. Have fun, eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonder Water. What makes Bai so great? It's simple. From Raspberry Lemon Lime by Sydney Sweeney to Zambia Bing Cherry and Palavo Pineapple Mango, Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonder Water. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
So Murdoch has exchanged his flamethrower for a hunting rifle with a scope, and he tries to shoot Mac off his perch. Meanwhile, Mac stumbles and falls, which causes the shot to narrowly miss him.
Yeah, he got lucky.
And what's funny is he slides to the other side of the pole and he has perfect cover, but then as he starts to shimmy down, he swings over, giving himself the perfect profile target for Murdoch to murder him, but apparently he doesn't. So
I think he was mostly having fun with the gun. That's not how he wanted this to end in a knife fight. He's just like, I gotta
this
scare him
true.
Off of the pole.
He needed to get a... He needed to get the film set up. So you can tell he just wasn't serious. He's trying to hurt him to the spot where he's going to get his yeah. kill shot, metaphorically.
He didn't even have the Polaroid out.
Uh, Speaking of the Polaroid, Pete arrives at the houseboat, sees the break-in, sees the photo. you know what? That's why he left the photo, because Pete wouldn't have known. Otherwise, it'd be like some lunatic burnt R.I.P. MacGyver into MacGyver's wall. But the Polaroid on the ground of it immediately made him think, oh my God, Murdoch right. is back.
Called Wait, is this a houseboat?
Yes.
I thought this was like MacGyver's house.
No, this is the houseboat. This is MacGyver's houseboat.
Yeah.
It's Pete's first houseboat. No, it's Pete's cabin, Max
Pete's
houseboat.
Okay. Gotcha.
He sees the R.I.P. MacGyver and he's like, wow, MacGyver's been making some avant-garde home decor decisions. Oh, right. Geez, there's a Polaroid of it.
Yeah, he calls that up Helen. Helen, I think MacGyver must be. He's picked up a new hobby. It's
wood burning.
It's wood burning, and also he's suicidal because he wants to kill himself. But he puts together his Murdoch and he calls the secretary. Says get DXS, which is their fictional government agency that does all this off the books secret agent stuff, and tell him that Murdoch is back. And he orders a chopper to take personal command of the situation. You're right, though, Jay. None of this goes anywhere.
Mm-mm.
Like, I guess it's nice that, like, MacGyver's got multiple avenues of winning, but he has to do everything himself anyway, so none of this matters. Pete doesn't even show up by the end of the episode.
Right. He's like, get the chopper ready. I'll be there in 10 minutes. And then the next shot is filmed from a helicopter, so it's like, okay, he's definitely going to show up at the end with a helicopter. Nope.
See, my theory is they...
He got blown up by landmines on the way.
He gets blown... Yeah, they had to clear all the books for season 4. My theory is that they have... Like, they just have jobber writers and directors. And they're like, this is about 45 minutes worth of shit. And then the director has his own ideas. And then the editor's like, oh my God, I got 73 minutes here. I'm going to start cut. And like... Yeah, so like if they're running short, they could have thrown in a denouement with Pete showing up and clapping MacGyver over it. But they didn't have any time for that, so all that stuff got lost in the editing bay. But they had not enough episodes, so they couldn't cut it all out.
Yeah. Thank God this was not a two-parter. Thank God. That's probably why I liked it, actually.
It is nice, a brisk 45-minute episode.
Yes.
What were you saying, Jim?
Is it weird that MacGyver's houseboat looks exactly like that observatory he was living in from the pilot? Like, it's got a spiral staircase, the same like kitchen island sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Oh my God, did they just redo the interior and say it's the houseboat?
It seems like it's smaller though, like they compressed everything.
Well, that's like Doctor Who's phone booth, man. It's just very
maybe.
His regular house sunk. And then his houseboat burned down.
Yeah. MacGyver, he's an innovator.
Get out of the way.
So MacGyver and Nikki run to the edge of the Widowmaker, and my God, this is a genuinely impressive and effective shot of these people running up, and it just looks like it drops off into you like 5 miles. It's insane. And Mac is obviously catatonic because he's like reliving his trauma from Mike dying. But he says, our only hope is to seek cover beneath that ledge that killed my friend on the Widowmaker. And it's going to take a significant free climb with no gear assist to get there. So,
well, the gear is what got Mike. So
that's true.
If she didn't have
gear,
that shitty card harness at all.
You don't ever trust the gear. You just trust your own sinew and grippy fingers and toes. But there's also just another incredible shot, a helicopter shot of these stunt people working their way down this chimney on this vertical, and it's fucking cool. And
what do you mean stunt
sickening.
People?
That's true. Richard Dean Anderson.
Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of like getting smushed up nice and close. Like, oh, the only way for you to get safely down to this part of the ledge is to
plausible holding and hugging and tugging and heaving and it's all in clean fun.
Has this person ever climbed anything in her life?
Doesn't seem like it.
Why would she have?
Right, which is kind of my point. Like, I don't think you can just put someone on a sheer rock face and expect them to be able to climb down. No matter how much humping MacGyver is doing, you're not gonna be safe.
And he's being kind of asked because at one point she's like, would you hold Bucky? And he's like, nah, you're fine. Just keep moving. Like, goddamn, dude. So they basically get to redo the Mike situation, except for he's Mike and she's Nikki's MacGyver. Mm-hmm. And he's successful. And it's so funny because
they look identical. It really does.
And what's funny is the music, the composer did not know what to do with the scene. Like, he whiplashes between Thriller, suspense, mournful, triumph. Like, every time Matt gets to a set, it's like, dun, dun, dun. And then he finds a piece of Nikki gear laying under, or a Mike gear, and he's like, oh, catatonic. And then, like, he looks over to Edge, and it starts getting Thriller music. And then Nikki's like, we got to focus up, Mac, and dun, dun, dun. And then it's just like, it just loops back these five different, very different cues, music cues. Thriller, mournful, suspense, Thriller, mournful, triumph. It's wild.
But like you said, Jay, it's pretty decent that they end up back here. Like, it didn't feel too forced either.
No.
You know, aside from the mine thing, I think, like, blocking the route off the mountain was a little silly, but
especially considering, like, it's the wood. You can go. You don't have to stay on the trail.
Right. That's what the Forest Service recommends for ecological safety and conservation. But you can, in fact, step off those trails.
It would be funny if it panned to one of those little signs that says, please do not trample the foliage. Like, we can't.
You understand, Nikki, there's rare forest owl, the only rest in these acres, and we could trample them all.
In fact, it appears their ground burrowing habitat has been thoroughly mined. Damn.
So along the way, he keeps on finding Nikki gear, and the he finds her ropes, and he starts using those so they can rappel down.
Out. Like, this mathematically plot wise made sense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I like
and then
it.
Then
it
he gets
right.
to the ledge, and he finds the chalk, and he's able to repeat her advice to chalk up your hands. Then they find her torn buckle, and he realizes it wasn't anything he did wrong. Her gear just fucking fell. And he's got a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against some poor son of a bitch
yeah,
that made this
seriously.
Equipment, I'm telling you. Right? You have one job, literally.
Yeah. And she does keep picking it up and being like, what's this? It's like, that was Mike's carabiner. What's this? That was her rope. It's
and
like,
again, every single
this?
Time oh, they do the... that, the composer yeah. has to do a whole... you know, musical tumble through the score. So they're like processing this, and they get to the ledge where they think they have safety, and all of a sudden it's Murdoch.
Dude, it's
flying in with a giant fucking Rambo style knife on some rope.
Aragorn has nothing on this guy's tracking abilities. Like, he absolutely nailed it. Found it, like, came in, and he was like, mind if I jump in?
He's got the phrase. He's got a pistol out, and Nikki does her patented door-opening straight kick. My favorite part is when he slashes MacGyver's shoulder, and MacGyver's wearing his rugged outerwear, and it just explodes into down.
Yeah.
Like, all these down feathers come flying out.
That's nice. Like, I wonder how do you do that as, like, a practical effect? Like, obviously he didn't slice into the coat or anything, but it looks good. Just Murdoch is unhinged right here, just jumping back and forth, swinging around voluntarily, having the time of his life.
I also like his move. Like, you can hold your knife. You can hold your knife point up. Or you can hold your knife point down, right? So he comes swinging and point down, and then they have an insert of him flipping the knife to a new position, and he grabs it point down again. It's like, so I guess he's just twirling his knife. He's just showing off.
That's a good point. He does. He doesn't change the position at all. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
How do you
like,
catch that shit,
Aaron? I don't know, dude. I just love it. Because, like, I'm just thinking, like, what's the editor thinking? Like, I mean, I guess it adds a lot of visual interest, but...
The editor's thinking we only got the one shot. Like, who's gonna notice?
Right. Yeah. We lost the light. We couldn't have the stuntman do one more.
That is the funniest thing.
But the, chalk bag gets reused as pocket sand.
Mm-hmm.
Enraged, Murdoch goes to slash MacGyver in the face, and MacGyver holds up Murdoch's climbing rig.
Right.
And he slashes through it, and yes. he falls to his death.
That's a question I have.
Well, we'll get to that. I want to say, though, because they throw another dummy off the cliff.
Love it.
Surely, like, in real life, they just threw those things 30 seconds apart. Like, they threw right. Mike yeah. down and filmed her, and then they threw... Because I think it's the exact same kind of, like, angle, and they just throw them, the two dummies down, and mm-hmm. There you go. And the whole way down, the whole 1,200 foot, he's like,
MacGyver!
Yeah.
We need to go to that cliff. Make up a MacGyver dummy. We need to re-edit this episode. Make up a MacGyver dummy. Make up a Pete dummy. Make up an Ellard dummy.
See,
everyone falls off.
I texted Jim this idea. It's like, we should take the mm-hmm. stunts of MacGyver out of context and then film ourselves running around in like rugged outerwear and mullets. And we just come up with like the way the Power Rangers took the Japanese robot suit bullshit yeah. and then made it about high school kids. We need to do that. I don't know what the hook is going to be, but it's going to be two dudes running around.
High school kids.
In
you guys.
In,
Yeah.
And yeah, high-waisted jeans and mullets. Yeah.
I love it. I think you have MacGyver fall off, you have the gal fall off, and then you have Ellard show up and like look over the edge. What gets him? Rogue Japanese torpedo.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a Navy man, you see.
finally found him. Mm-hmm.
So the danger's over, and they decided that the SOS gambit may not work, so MacGyver prepares to free climb their way out of there.
Right, yeah, that's the thing. They're like, well, it might not. We have no way of knowing if that did anything, so.
What, and he helps her off the cliff, and she asks him how he's doing. He's like, I'm good. I'm real good. And he's smiling. He's got a smile yeah. back. Adrenaline, yeah. man. It's all you needed. You need a little healthy dose of adrenaline. And anyway, he talks her into into climbing this again. Although, again, this seems extremely dangerous. You almost died.
Serious.
Your best expert mountain climber friend did die. And you could wait to be rescued, but you're just like, nah, fuck it.
Imagine if she had fallen to her death right here. After all
that. Oh, replacement Mike, no! So
they could throw the same dummy, too.
Yeah, that's true.
They could. So he talks her into getting out of there with him, and he sets his sight as the mountain as he freeze frames, and the theme music plays out. Now, Jay, you had a suspicion that this isn't the last we'd see of...
Right.
Our this isn't the last we're going to hear of our Murdoch here.
Right. It possibly cannot be. I mean, he did fall thousands of feet into the rough forest, but he's a survivor, you know. He's a tough guy.
He's been blown up by dynamite before.
Yeah, he got some Wile E. Coyote sort of physics working for him, but there's no way this is the end of him, right?
I have a list that we can run down if you'd like.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like he comes back like six more times, I think.
Okay,
he's
thank
in every
you.
Fucking season.
See? Jim was acting like I was so stupid for thinking that Mike wasn't gonna die from the fall originally, but then he survives the very same fall.
He does, and I have no idea how, because this is 100% lethal.
Yeah.
But so are the other ways he dies. Like, so I have a list of all the ways he's died. Six times in the series.
Oh my God.
We don't get to see the building collapse on him. That's the first time that Mac and Pete kill him. But then he gets blown up by dynamite in a truck. Here he falls thousands of feet off a cliff. Apparently he drove off a cliff as well in a car that then exploded on impact.
Nice.
He's been electrocuted and fallen into a pool of flaming water.
Okay. Nice. That's all sorts of elements.
Right? That's everything.
Yeah.
And then he's fallen down an abandoned mine shaft.
Okay, that's survivable.
Dude, I feel like I want to get together some weekend and just marathon to Murdoch episodes.
Oh, God.
Just have a mini Murdoch marathon.
He's Murdathon. Fine.
Murdathon.
And, like, the actor's just hamming it up, too. Like, mm-hmm. He's having fun with it.
And the voice.
Mind if
the
I
voice.
Drop by? just so silly.
Not quite MacGyver.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
I wonder if they brought him back every time the ratings started to flag, since this is, like, the top-rated episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they...
Well, do you remember... Because I was also like, this is weird that it's not a season finale, and this felt like a really big episode. And then I remember... Do you remember the concept called Sweeps Weeks?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Where, like, there was only, like, a few times a year that the ratings really mattered. Like, and that set the rate of your advertising, so mm-hmm. they would intentionally try to do their sexiest plots and time them. And a lot of times they didn't come at the end of the season. They came in, like, the mid-season or whatever. So that must explain, like, the Murdoch was the Sweeps Week... The sexy sweep hammer.
Or they bust them out anytime there's like potential contract negotiations. Like, I don't know. Do you really want to ask for that? We got a Murdoch episode coming
right,
up.
Right. Actor that plays Nikki, you saw what happened to fucking Mike.
Yeah.
You know, and that was TV's Knight Rider. What the hell are you? So they're playing hardball with these actors back in the day.
Well. I do just gotta say, I loved it. I loved it.
Well, I was gonna say, because we're doing this on a most improved scale. Mm-hmm. We saw there was essentially a flat line between the two Dukes of Hazzard episodes.
Right. How do you grade like a most improved? How many letter grades it went up?
That's okay. So let's say like the original Dukes of Hazzard was an A. And maybe a Bad Day in Hazzard, the episode we watched, was like a A minus. What would you say the original MacGyver was? Like a B minus? A B?
You're going to hate me, but I was going to give it a C.
Okay.
And
this
is squarely
average.
A minus. This episode is an A minus.
That's two letter grade improvement. Yeah. That's pretty fucking sweet. If you want to send in feedback, you can
do
so.
You got to give me your letter grades, though. Both of you guys, what do you think? From pilot to...
The pilot episode of MacGyver was everything I was looking for from an improvisational MacGyver game. Like, it was impressive, muscular, in the Mr. Wizard application of science. The thing that... And I liked the scenario, like the weapons lab that he has to infiltrate to keep the stakes were cool.
Yeah.
I felt like the MacGyver was just a little too much in that episode. He was a little too Gary Stu, a little too devil may care about everything, a little too hammy with the women. And they didn't quite find the MacGyver gear. And unfortunately, this isn't a representative episode either. So I'd say that the pilot is probably solidly a B MacGyver episode. And the more I think about it, the more because this is a very different MacGyver. This probably felt important and cool and big, and the continuity it had. But it's still the gadgets really knock it down for me. I think this is another B episode for me. It's almost a straight line between the pilot and this.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't like dark brooding MacGyver.
It's so funny.
And you spend most of your time with him that way this episode. So I feel like. If the pilot to me is really strong, it has all the things I like about MacGyver. So that's probably the A in my mind, and this is the B. And it's only saved by the unhinged, crazy, flame happy Murdoch.
I do like
and the falling bodies.
At the dummies add a lot. That's a full letter grade for throwing a mannequin off of a cliff. That was probably the most fun part of the shoot, though. Like, all right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I imagine it's really, from a liability standpoint, it's probably scary throwing anything off an edge like that. Because, like, Jesus Christ, what if someone's below?
Extra not fun.
But...
Not fun for the Boy Scout troop camped out at the base of the mountain, but...
but I forget what I was going to say.
I wonder how they
I liked when they threw Mike's dummy off. I noticed they tastefully cut right before the dummy was going to smack him through the wall, because I was kind of a morbid fascination. What the hell? They didn't do that for Murdoch. Murdoch got to hit a couple branches and rocks and shit because fuck Murdoch, right? I wonder how does he fucking survive this? Mm. How does he survive
on
this?
The flaming mattress.
1,200 feet.
In directly onto the pillow factory.
The thing is I don't think they ever explained it, because he got blown the fuck up like dynamite less than a foot from his body in the previous episode.
This could be clone docs. So,
you know, I mean, season 7 might get crazy. That's the season they canceled it, so. Anyway, as I was saying, if you'd like to send us feedback, feeny@baldmove.com is how you do it. feeny@baldmove.com. First up was Ed from Calgary. So this is the latest episode, you're talking about dramas versus serials. Daytime soaps were discussed, but 1980s, there was primetime weekly dramas that were absolutely huge. In our house on Fridays, Dallas was after Dukes.
Dallas.
Eventually, I got to stay up and watch the adult show. It had a banger theme song, and those Ewing boys sure made a tear through extramarital affairs with buxom ladies. Hoo boy! Yeah, you had the Falcon Crests. You had the Hill Street Blues. You had the St. Elsewhere's. You had the Dallas's. There was some serious things. It wasn't all just action comedies. I guess, what's your appetite for checking out a serious prestige drama in the 80s?
Oh, I would love to.
I would love to watch the Shogun miniseries with you.
Ooh.
Because that's like my dad's favorite novel, and he always talks about the TV series and how much he liked it. And like, I can vaguely remember a man being boiled alive, and that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And then I was out, you know. But like, yeah, that might be some season 3. Do a mini series.
That could be way fun.
Historical fiction mini series.
Yes. Oh man, there's got to be a ton of options.
Oh, there's so many.
I Claudius. I'm not watching that again. I have seen it.
Man, because there's also one of my favorites is Merlin.
What? I don't think that's a historical figure.
They had this big budget Arthurian legend take with Sam Neill
of
Jurassic
Park
fame. Yeah.
Oh, wow. As Merlin?
He is Merlin, yes.
What?
Yeah. Oh. I think it's got Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh.
I think.
Well, then I am in.
There's a lot of big names. It's a big event. Martin Short. I might turn you off of the project.
Oh, I'm back out.
thanks for feedback, Ed. Virgilio's up next. Says, when you were recounting the pilot, I started to have vague memories of Dungeons. Oh, he's talking about The Greatest American Hero. He's a recommendation for the best one of these. I think you're going to like it. I started to have vague memories of a Dungeons and Dragons based episode.
Oh,
I had Peacock,
yeah.
So I looked it up and watched the episode. It's called Wizards and Warlocks. I don't know if it's the most highly rated episode, but it's definitely the most 80s nerd of their episodes, I bet, with both LARPing and video arcade mini tournament.
Oh, I'm willing to, Zach. Listen, we're agile on this podcast.
We'll see what IMDb says, but that's a strong fucking pitch, Virgilio.
I agree.
I'm gonna pencil that in at the top here. Wizards and Warriors, was it?
Warlocks.
Boy, Magic Heavy, they're Dungeons and Dragons. Chris says, I loved Airwolf. I thought the first season was dark. Subsequent seasons were more family friendly. Well, it's good we're keeping it in season 1. I loved the A-Team. Mr. T was a star, though George Peppard was not a fan, and he felt he himself was a star and hard to work with. I bet. Fucking old dude. Not wanting to play nice. Because Mr. T was the obvious star of that show. Dukes of Hazzard and MacGyver. I just started watching Fall Guy, and I thought this would be an awesome show for you to review for the premise. The stunts, Jody, which is Heather Locklear in her prime, and Colt's badass truck, though Jay may hate the theme and the fact that Hollywood is somewhat featured in the Glenn Larson-created show. I love the Fall Guy theme. It's very much like Dukes of Hazzard. It's one of those...
Am I coming across as a hater?
With this theme song, we're talking theme songs here.
Oh, you know. Okay.
But it's like one of those, you know, like it's telling a story. It's telling you You know, I'm the unknown stuntman. Seasons 1 and 2 are on Prime Amazon Video. I hope you guys consider reviewing an episode. You're doing great work on these reviews. Thanks for your awesome, entertaining podcast. Well, thanks, Chris. We are kind of up in the air about what we'll do for season 3. We had a plan for season 2 and chucked it to Audible for this format, and it's worked out pretty good.
I like playing it loose. Let's just watch Band of Brothers for season 3.
I'm always down to rewatch Band of Brothers.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time.
It's been a minute.
I watched the History Channel version, which so is all like fart these Nazis.
Yeah,
you know? Like,
yeah.
It was all watered down in weird ways.
They really soft pedal the horrors of war.
Yeah.
Danielle says, "I'm with Jay on the subject of gleeking. Gleeking is pulling your tongue back with your mouth open and spraying saliva from your salivary glands under your tongue. Can usually do it if I'm in between bites of food or drinks, since my salivary glands are actively producing saliva."
Oh, interesting. Okay.
She links an article from Dinta Gamma called "What is Gleeking?" She says, "I'm originally from Arizona, now live in Portland. Maybe this is a West Coast / millennial thing."
I think it's a west versus east of the Mississippi.
I just don't know what is going on with your salivary glands that they are literally spraying out.
I can only do it accidentally sometimes, but like it's only certain people have been touched by God in the way that they can control it.
Yeah, this website's claiming it's a salivary gland expression, but I always...
We have multiple people saying it's also... launching water, like using the pressure between your front teeth to launch water, means that is also known as gleeking.
Yeah.
I had never heard of a word for that before.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's your episode of Gleek Talk for the week. And I think, did I accidentally shut down my notes? Oh my God. Oh, I actually just hard clicked on a Gleek link. Interesting reading. That's going to do it for this week. Feeny@baldmove.com if you would like to send in feedback in the future. But yeah, we will be talking about Airwolf, Mind of the Machine next week with David Carradine. I'm excited about that. Jay, who are you? What are you doing? What you about? If we want to find you, where do we do that?
Jay McCain, as always, you can find me on Blue Jay Streams on Twitch and my YouTube channel that I've been promoting.
I was on vacation and this rocked my world.
Yeah, it got taken down.
Why?
For bullying, because I was too mean to the people that got caught up on To Catch a Predator, I guess.
Are you fucking kidding me? Did you try disputing it?
Yes.
And they already told you get fucked?
Yes, and quickly did they. Very quickly. So, like the Hydra, you cut off one of my heads, 2 grown its place. Now I have 2 YouTube channels. One is Blue Jay Returns. That's for, like, my more edited, produced stuff. And then my Coffee for Teekapistan is back, and that's on a channel called Coffee from Teekapistan. I even said it wrong. It's Coffee from Teekapistan. And I need help, folks. I need the Bald Move Army to subscribe, because I am having the damnedest time scratching the algo. And I will return. But listen, I have the opportunity to go back and do it better, because I'm more experienced now. So I can do it again. I can
catch
do it
even more predators. Bully
nope,
child molesters
we do
even
not,
harder.
We do not bully, threaten, or harass on my channel. We do not make fun of intrinsic characteristics. We abide by all community guidelines.
All right. Good to know. Good to know.
Find it and watch if you want. It's fun. It's a good time. But definitely consider following me on Twitch. We have like nightly streams, and we all chit-chat, and we keep each other safe and sound. And it's a great time over on Twitch. Blue Jay Streams.
I always have a good time when I stop by your channel, Jay. Jim, thanks for coming on once again to share your love for MacGyver. Any parting words for the Feeny fans?
No. If you guys ever revisit MacGyver, though, let me know. I'll be back.
All right. Well, I'm going to hit you up for a Murdathon. Jay, take us out.
Oh, yeah. Until next time. Kit, why don't you hit the ejector seats? Whoa! That's us falling out of the podcast.
Belay on! Belay on!
You know, the trouble with running is you always take yourself with you.